Hi, I'm Jamie Poisson. Gunshots in Myanmar, where demonstrators continue to take to the streets a month after the military staged a brutal coup.
The military made its move in the early hours of the morning, detaining Myanmar's democratically elected leader, Aung San Suu Kyi.
The army assaulted people as it carried out the coup, says this man, who describes his country as a bird learning to fly, and now the army has broken its wings.
According to the United Nations, at least 18 people were killed and 30 injured just on Sunday, when the military fired live ammunition into crowds in several cities across the country. There have also been mass arrests. But despite the escalation in violent tactics, hundreds of thousands of protesters continue to defy the military and risk their lives to fight for democracy. My guest today is a student protester in Yangon, a major city in Myanmar. We're withholding her name for her safety, so I'll just be calling her Tan. When we connected, she had just arrived home from a long day of dodging security forces and tear gas.
Hello?
Hi, is this Tan?
Yes.
Hi, it's Jamie from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for being interested in our country's affairs.
And you're home safe now?
Yes, I am. I just got back like 2 or 3 hours ago.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that. I hear that you're out almost every day protesting against the military and their takeover. What's it been like out there?
Well, in the very beginning, it wasn't too rough, like at least in the cities. It was more rough and cruel acts happened in other parts of the country. But right now, it's almost everywhere. It's the same thing. Like, they became like a terrorist and they cracked down. They used real guns. And so many people have been shot to death. So many people have been arrested and nobody know where they are. So a lot of things has been happening.
Right. And I know that the United Nations is saying that at least 18 people were killed just on Sunday. Were you out on Sunday? Can you tell me a little bit about what it was like to be in the crowds?
Yes, Sunday was really rough, but I was with the protest group, and then we were hiding because they started shooting us, and we some neighbors hide us in at their homes, and they feed us food and like random strangers. Because the whole country is against the military and like they feed us like these young kids, like eat the food, get some energy, this and this. And then we sneak out from the back door and we join the other big group. And what happened is the place that I was in, it was so united and even the neighbors were like helping us so much and they throw the blanket for us to use it against the smoke bombs and everything. So I wasn't in a very bad situation, but I realized when I get back home, when I look through the social media posts and everything, and so many people have been like dead and like shot, and so many people got injured in other part of Yangon, like the city I'm in, and also it was worse in many many other states in my country. So Sunday was like really bad.
And so things have really escalated on the streets in the last week, right?
This was the day Myanmar's army set out to impose its will, whatever the cost. Two terrified women watched as police, commanded by an army officer, advanced on the protesters, calmly shooting directly into the crowd.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how things have gotten worse?
So I think the reason is we're really like focusing on CDM, like the civil disobedience movement, and everybody has been supporting it. And I think it's effective that the military is kind of afraid of that. And we are out there to support and like to show that we are against it, like to support the people who are doing CDM and to also like show the military that we cannot accept this coup and that we cannot accept this terrorist act. And I don't know, they just started cracking down on these peaceful protesters and they just started doing all sort of things. And I cannot imagine how they can even do that. Like, it's not a normal human mind.
And you and I are talking on Tuesday, and I understand that the military was also using tear gas and rubber bullets today. Can you tell me a little bit more about what was happening today?
Today, yes. So what happened is the military right now, like these days, they started cracking down even on a small group and even in the different neighborhoods. Normally, when we do the protest, we go on these like public square, big square, and we gather there and we do the peaceful protest, right? So they didn't even allow that anymore. So people started protesting inside their own neighborhood, and people started protesting like in whatever way they can, like they gather when they can and they protest in their own neighborhood when they cannot. So today I was in a neighborhood and we have like a defense team and like young defense team in front of it. And then we are in the middle and like catching the tear gas and throwing them back to them. And sometimes the neighbors, like they throw blanket for us so that we can catch the tear gas. And like we use the cooler and water and like we're just doing all sort of things that we can to fight against them. We don't use guns and we don't, but we also need to protect ourselves. So these are kind of the self-defense things that we have been doing.
Right, Tan, you're saying that you're using blankets to catch the tear gas and then you throw the tear gas back?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes, with our own money, we bought gloves and stuff so that we can catch the tear gas and we can throw that throw them back to them however we can. And sometimes we soak the water, we soak the blanket in the water and we can just wipe the tear gas, that kind of things.
And you mentioned a defense team. What do you mean by that?
So what happened is before we weren't really organized because none of us has been experienced this. So when they come, we just like ran away. So it seems like, you know, we are out there, but we just keep running away. So we decided to, a lot of us decided to do have a defense team, meaning that a group of young people stay in front. And as long as the cracking down is not serious, they said, people don't move, we'll be there. And if they shoot, we will cover you and then you can run. Like we will give you the alarm, like, you know. So that's why we can stay longer in the street and we can protest longer. Otherwise, as long as we have a false alarm, we just run away. So
Tan, you're saying that there are people who are putting themselves between protesters and the military. They're saying we'll die for this, essentially.
Definitely, yes, definitely. So we are in the middle and we're the one who catch the tear gas and this and that, and those people are the one in front, in between like the protester and the military, and they are the one who, like, you know, gives the real alarm if we should run or not. Otherwise we keep running and we can't even protest because we don't know what they're gonna do. So now we can stay a little longer in the street.
Okay. Tan, listening to you describe this defense team that you're talking about, you know, you're out there catching tear gas canisters. It sounds really scary. Are you worried about your own safety?
Well, because we know the military too much already, like our whole life. So we're more worried that we will go back to the dark age. The whole system will be like under, like, we don't want to be under their, management anymore, you know? And right now, after experiencing this, I noticed how many other ethnic groups in different areas of the country have been experiencing. So we don't want that to happen anymore. So we're more worried that they will be in power than losing our life.
Pause the interview for just a second to give some more context here. When Tan says that protesters are more worried about going back to the dark age, she's talking about the total control of Myanmar by the military, a dictatorship. This is the way things were in the country for a really long time. Like, I'm talking about from the early 1960s to about 2011. That's when a new government pushed for a return to civilian rule.
It was the first time in 20 years that they'd seen anything approaching free and fair elections.
Democracy icon Aung San Suu Kyi was elected to parliament after decades of house arrest.
This is the country's new parliament, and some politicians are openly telling us that they're still learning.
But the military never really let go of power.
Even before a vote is cast, the result is ensured. 25% of seats will go to the military.
And the military's current commander, the guy who orchestrated the coup on February 1st, well, he's been in power for about a decade and has held major influence over the country, even as Myanmar slowly transitioned to a more democratic system. It was under his leadership that Myanmar's military has been condemned by the international community and the UN Human Rights Council for war crimes and an alleged genocide against Rohingya Muslims.
Two foot soldiers seem to support the accusation. They describe being ordered to destroy village after village, commanded to kill civilians, adults, and children, and throw them into mass graves.
Dean Muhammad says they were firing in my area and even called us out from our home and then slit my father's throat.
And Tan's awakening to the treatment of ethnic minorities in Myanmar is where we're going to pick up the conversation. You mentioned that you understand now what different ethnic groups have been experiencing. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? What do you mean by that?
So the military and different ethnic groups always have conflict, and it's all over the country, like mostly in rural area, like very, very remote areas. But normally people like don't really get a lot of information and people really don't know what it is like. And now this happened and a lot of people are started to speaking out about that. And the ethnic groups are telling like, this is what we are talking about. This is it. And then now people become more united. I think that's the bright, like the silver lining things, like the whole country became united against one terrorist group.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned how you don't want to go back to the dark ages, the dark times. And can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So until I go abroad to study, I didn't notice what I have been like missing, what I have been losing, you know, like I grew up with two TV channels and I thought it was normal. And the whole system is corrupted and the education system is corrupted. And when I got scholarship to study abroad and when I first went out of the country, I just realized how much we couldn't do, like how much we could do if we just have chances, if we just have a better education system. There are so many things to develop. And I came back to Burma and this thing happened. So we have so many other issues to resolve.
Right. These two television channels you talk about, they're run by the state, right?
Yes. They're fake news now.
Yeah. You have a lot of dreams for your country. Is that what you're trying to say here?
Yes, I do. And I was so hopeful, like even though we didn't have a 100% democracy back then, I was really hopeful like for the transition. And I was like, maybe we will get one day, but I didn't even think that they would do the coup at all. Nobody expected that. And then that happened and we were like, okay, now we have no choice. We have to fight back.
Who's protesting alongside you? I know you're obviously young, you're a student. Who else is with you?
Mostly young people are out there because recently there was one generation, a little older woman, and she has a heart attack just because of the boom sounds, and she passed away, things like that. So mostly the people out there are younger generation. However, even the neighbors, they are like, at the balconies and they're like clubbing for us, and like they said if something happened just come inside their house and they prepare food for us. So almost everyone's just kind of out there, but we're just only there physically.
But they're helping you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, during the day, you know, people might remember in 1988 when there was a very bloody crackdown against student protesters just like you right now. Thousands of people died.
Mm-hmm.
The army quickly took control of the streets and issued regulations on the radio banning further protests.
No one shall go out of doors without permission.
At first, the protesters ignored the military's orders and continued demonstrating. Without warning, the army opened fire from a building near the American embassy.
And many students just lay on the platform and some on the roads.
And are you thinking about that? Are you and your fellow protesters thinking about that?
Yes, in the beginning, we were very, very careful because we have a lot of news that, you know, like in the UN, China and Russia, they keep saying that this is an internet affair. This is not crime against humanity. That this is an internet affair. And like, you know, nobody should interfere, this and that. So people were so careful because we worried that military would use the same trick that they used back in 1988, because they trying to create like riots and like they're trying to release like some higher killers and like saying that this is like a riot and like, you know, so they have to control the state, something like that. So we couldn't do that. So that's why people have been like telling each other to be like peaceful and like non-violence, peaceful. We have to be like, you know, patient and this and this and this. So even till now, like we're really proud that everybody is so united and we didn't do anything violent. Apart from like during the self-defense thing, like picking up things and throwing back at them, or like, you know, when they are like too close, we hit back.
Mm-hmm.
So like right now, we think that we are more hopeful than 1988 because we have the information flow and people are like a little bit more cautious. Like the younger generations are more creative, I guess.
I know you say that there's an information flow, but also the military is shutting down the internet periodically, right? And is that making it more difficult and more challenging?
Yeah, it does. Like they do it from 1 a.m. to 9 a.m. So it does make it difficult, but we got it during the day. I don't know if they're going to shut down that one as well, but we got it in the day. And the younger generation these days, I think they're very flexible. So it's a little bit unpredictable. And like we protest like a water, you know, like we just like, if something blocked here, we move the other way and like we change the plan. And so that's why I'm like a little more like optimistic about the situation when I'm out there, even though it's so dangerous and I know that we could get hurt at any time.
Right. You're protesting like water. Your parents, are they worried about you?
Oh yeah, very. So my mom didn't want me to go out at all, but she knew that she couldn't stop me. So she just that she would just stay inside and pray and like just be careful and like come back. And I put my blood and the phone number, emergency numbers and stuff on my ends and in my phone screen lock as well. So yeah, so I told them that like, don't call me, don't contact me. If you don't hear any news, that's a good news. I'm like safe. If something happened to me, someone will call you with these numbers. So
because you're saying you write your blood type and emergency numbers on your hand for other people to call your parents in case something happens to you?
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Almost everyone is doing that, yeah.
Yeah. Tin, what do you hope the international community does here?
We really want them to know that the military is a terrorist group and they are doing all sort of this crime against humanity acts, and we want them to boycott their businesses because they are using all the tax and all their business money to buy the military products and like guns and everything to sustain their power. And we really want them to like boycott and do the social punishment things. And we want UN to act quickly if they can, but I rely more on the strength from inside my country. So the thing that the international community can do is you can simply just stand on the right side. Even if you can't help us, we just don't help them.
Tin, thank you so much for talking with me today. And please stay safe out there and please keep us posted on what's happening.
Oh, thank you so much for interviewing and thank you for praying for us and thank you for being interested in these cases as well. Yes. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, well, we're thinking of you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right, so that was Than in Yangon. And now, before I let you go, let's talk about Aung San Suu Kyi, the controversial and once-beloved pro-democracy icon and Nobel Peace Prize laureate. It's important to note that Suu Kyi has come under harsh criticism for her failure to protect Rohingya Muslims from gross human rights violations under her leadership, and for defending Myanmar by denying accusations of genocide at the UN International Court of Justice. Suu Kyi's party, the National League for Democracy, won a decisive victory in Myanmar in November, just months before the coup, when she and other political leaders were arrested and detained by the army. She now faces criminal charges for using illegally imported walkie-talkie radios and breaching coronavirus protocols, charges that have garnered much skepticism by the international community. And she was seen in court via video link earlier this week. That's all for today. I'm Jamie Poisson. Thanks so much for listening to Front Burner. We'll talk to you tomorrow.